Yes.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the July 23rd meeting of the Portland City Council. Will you please call the roll, Sue?
Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Before we begin the regular calendar, I want to welcome a group of students in the room from the Oregon Fellows Summer Program at the PSU Hatfield School of Government. Some of you know these students already because they're working in our offices or otherwise in city administration. It's a program that OMF is working with, and they're sponsoring a job shadow day today. They are here to see how this part of the public process works. They're from all over the country. They come to Oregon to participate in this PSU program. During this time, they're either in a 10-week or 8-month job placement with a public agency somewhere in the metropolitan area. They're focusing their studies in areas of financial management, sustainability, project and grant management, social and environmental policy analysis, economics, budgeting, quantitative research methods, and urban planning. In their spare time, they might think about another subject or two, but that's a lot. And they're also matching up individually with city professionals from the financial analysis and management analysis side who volunteered to serve as mentors to the students. Some of them are here. Each student has the opportunity to interface with at least a couple of our professionals during the day. So we want to welcome the Oregon Fellows. We hope you enjoy this council session and the rest of this process. Thanks to OMF. I see Betsy's here. Would you like to talk a little bit about this program for a moment? Okay, she's.
It's a good partnership with Portland State.
So what's.
It's a good partnership with Portland State University, and those who are here.
Could you stand and we'll recognize you? Good morning, welcome. Let's hear it. The future public administrators, get to know them, you'll recognize them when they're back here in another capacity, we hope. Thank you all, and good luck. Okay, we'll begin the regular calendar. We have five communications items first, and then we'll move into the rest of the calendar. For those of you who are here to speak, we have some rules, which is we give people typically 3 minutes to speak, including in our public communications, unless there's a special presentation that's been invited for the council session. If you want to demonstrate your support for somebody, please do so non-verbally. If you agree with them, give them a wave or something, but we want to make sure everyone has the opportunity to speak and be heard. If you have materials to distribute to the council, please give them to our clerk, Sue. And if you are a lobbyist representing an organization, please disclose that and who you're representing when you come up to speak. And with that, we'll take the communications items first. Troy, Sue, thank you.
Item 766, request of Crystal Olinsky to address council regarding incumbency. What does it really mean?
Is she here? Is Crystal here? Okay, then let's move on to the next one.
Request of Lightning to address council regarding Clean Water Act dredging.
Good morning, Lightning. Welcome.
Morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Think Lab. One of the issues that I have on dredging, as you know, we're moving forward on the Willamette Park boat launch, which is a city-owned property to have it dredged. And they've tested some of the silt or the dredging material, and it's contaminated. Now, they've tried to take that contaminated material to an off-site location on the land, and they've been denied. So, in my opinion, we've got a little bit of a problem there, because I really wonder if there's been enough research to see if other locations might take that contaminated dredging material. But they've come up with a solution, and their solution is, let's dredge and take it from the Willamette, transport it up to the Columbia, and dump it into the river. Now, you see, I have a big problem with that, is that if we don't start looking at that river and trying to protect the river, and quit using it for a dumping site for contaminations, you don't want to swim in those rivers. And I'm telling you now, I have a real problem with this on not looking at other alternatives for this contaminated dredging material. The solution is not to take it up to the Columbia River and dump it back into the river. And as you know, you all might be wondering, well, why not just dump it in the Willamette, take it a little ways down and do that? Well, I think you've all heard the term Superfund. They're not going to do it on the Willamette because we have a Superfund cleanup in the process or getting ready to move forward, and they don't want to do it on the Willamette anymore. So let's take it up to the Columbia and dump it into the river there. I'm not happy with Oregon Marine Board. I'm not happy with the Corps of Engineers, Army Corps of Engineers. I think you need to start rethinking on what you're going to do with contaminated dredging material. And I have a real problem with what you're doing here. And you may approve it, and they may stand back and say, we've been approved. But I don't approve it. I disagree with what you're doing. And remember the term Superfund cleanup. And you are in the position to make sure that this river does not become more contaminated in the future, and you're not doing your job. So I'm appalled at what you're doing on this. Thank you.
Lightning, I appreciate you making the points. You're illustrating why the Office of Healthy Working Rivers was a good concept, and the folks there were looking at exactly the questions that you're asking.
Yes.
In the absence of that office, if you could please contact Patty Howard in my office, and she'll give you the background of why that was approved.
Okay, and like I say, I've dealt with the Army Corps of Engineers myself. I've dealt with the Oregon Marine Board. They may decide that it's correct to do that, and in the past it's been correct, but the public knows you don't take contaminated dredging material, transfer it from the Willamette, and dump it into the Columbia that hasn't been named a Superfund site as of this time, and that needs to stop. You don't put contamination back into the river. I'm appalled at the Oregon Marine Board, I'm appalled at the Army Corps of Engineers, and I think you need to start rethinking this and understand contamination does not belong in the river. If you remove it, keep it out of the river. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, next item, please.
768, request of Angela Hammett to address council regarding citizens' right to privacy and the ESP program administered by the Police Bureau.
Ms. Hammett, you here? Angela? Okay. Well, let's move on then, please.
769, request of Benjamin Barber to address council regarding the National Day of Civic Hacking.
Mr. Barber, come on up. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you all for your time. So a month or two ago, there was this event called the National Day of Civic Hacking, and it provides people like myself the ability to serve our country without going to war overseas. And it was a great opportunity to meet like-minded individuals. We were working on the Zedell property site, and we're coming up with ideas for how that could be best utilized, and came up with a concept of an innovation corridor and some short-term uses, and those uses are already being used, such as the, what was it called? There was a big concert down there for, anyways. I digress. There is, as you may well know, the OSCON open source convention that's going on currently at the Expo Center. Similarly, you know, pretty much the majority of all the computers that are running today are basically built by these communist software developers. And I know that some of you have talked about the sharing economy, and maybe some of that ought to be the city sharing the burden of its work with its citizens. There is, for instance, the bike share, I'm sure you guys know. For instance, Intel sponsors a group called the Open Bike Initiative, which seeks to make an open source bike lock, which can be remotely activated. Similarly, I see an item on your agenda for parking enforcement. And while I'm sure that the company is very competent and will deliver a good product, I see no reason why a competent mobile developer could not build, for instance, an application downloadable by anyone on any smartphone to take pictures and issue a ticket, since we have a civil or an individual citation process. And perhaps it would require less meter maids to patrol if people were given the tools to do it themselves. So what I'd like to propose is that, you know, someone in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement find some method of providing an infrastructure or method where people who want to donate their time to worthy causes and endeavors that the city wants to do to be able to do so.
Thanks. Good suggestion. Now, I think the idea of hackathons and other ways for people in the tech community to give us innovative ideas, we haven't quite figured it out, but I think it's something that on the public sector side we're really interested in.
Yeah, by all means. And if you ever need me, I'll be happy to provide some help.
Good. Thank you very much. Thanks. Okay, item 770.
770, request of Donald Scott Upham to address council regarding police bureau actions concerning Megan McCoy.
Good morning, Mr. Upham. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Scott Upham. On February 25th, not a there's no pending claim.
Well, you have a client, so if you just identify your status before you tell us.
Oh, sure. I represent a lady who reported to the Washington County Sheriff's Office that she had been raped by a man, both in Multnomah and Washington counties. Thereafter, Washington County submitted the report to the Portland Police Bureau in January of 2012. Both my client and her rape victim advocate contacted the Portland Police Bureau on several occasions to find out what they were doing about this complaint. But they were stonewalled and never received response. So finally, each gave up. I wrote this letter 2 years later to the Portland Police Bureau on this lady's behalf to find out why she was never contacted and why this case was never investigated. A couple hours after I wrote the email, I got a response back from the chief's office saying that someone should be contacting me soon. We then came down to Portland 3 days later and spent 2 hours with a detective who took a partial statement from her, didn't even come close to completing all the information in her possession. She was asked and she agreed to allow the police to come to her house to download all the information on her phone that she'd accumulated for over 4 years, text messages, emails, so on and so forth. I asked to receive a copy of that report and they said I couldn't get one. I then asked the detectives why on earth was she not contacted for over 2 years, and neither had an explanation for that. The following day, 5 days later, after the interview, I got a letter from George Burke, commander of the detective division, saying, "Thank you for taking the time to follow up with us. This case has been assigned to Detective Tracy Chamberlain for follow-up. He will be in touch with you in the near future." Obviously, he didn't know that we'd already been interviewed. He says, "I believe the intended path for this will be to present it to the DA's office for possible prosecution when the investigation is complete. We will be working closely with your client as we move forward." I then wrote back to the chief's office and said, "I just got the email from Commander Burke, but he did not answer my question as to why no action has been taken on this case for over 2 years. And to this day, I still haven't received an answer as to what happened. The reports that were received by the Portland Police Bureau more than 2 years ago. And of course, the Public Records Act requires the Police Bureau to maintain and preserve those documents."
You've used your time, and we don't want to go into the whole case now, but one, I appreciate you highlighting this and bring it to our attention. Two, I understand the district attorney is about to schedule this case for a grand jury.
Well, that's news to us.
Well, that's what I've just been told this morning, so it's news to me, too. And then Commander Burke is here in the room, and I'd actually suggest that you and he confer about preparing for the grand jury, because it sounds like, for whatever reason, at long last, the case is going to a grand jury. So you're obviously doing your job as an advocate for your client. We appreciate that, and this is a serious crime whenever it occurs or is alleged, so it needs to get to a grand jury, and I'm glad to see that that's happening.
Well, I really wanted to impart that, boys who grow into men are trained and told never to hit a woman, ever. But sexually assaulting women seems to be kind of okay in this society.
Well, it's not tolerated here.
And the course of this so-called investigation, which is now more than 2.5 years old, kind of indicates that that attitude prevails in the DA's offices in this metropolitan area and in the police departments. Not one witness was interviewed in this case until July, and that was only after the Oregonian wrote an article. Well, again, and now, today, I hear, because I've come to you folks, right, someone's going to do something about it. This shouldn't be required. I mean, I don't like to come down here and be a jerk and tell you people what a terrible job has been done in this particular case, but I've made multiple attempts to communicate with you, Mayor Hales, and the police chief, and no one has ever responded to me.
Well, we'll find out why that happened, because that shouldn't happen. And again, Commander Burke is here. I want to ask you to meet with him, and then I'll follow up with him and get a report to my office about what's happened with this case and why. So I appreciate you highlighting it, and I don't think you're being a jerk by bringing your client's legitimate interests to the public. So we appreciate you doing that and appreciate you spending time with him. And obviously, I will also spend some time with the district attorney on the subject of sexual assault cases, because we take them very seriously, and Commander Burke and his detectives take them seriously when they're investigating one, as well as our Drugs and Vice Division is pretty serious about human trafficking and all the consequences of it. So something that that is a priority for the Portland Police Bureau, and I'm sorry if it, in this case the process has been slow or uncertain, because that's not what our intent in this council.
Well, the proof's in the pudding.
It is.
And this is the status as it right now. So,
thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Anyone arrived that was called earlier? Zielinski or Ms. Hammett? No? Okay. So now let's move to consent agenda, please. I don't believe we have any requests to remove items from the consent calendar. Is that right?
I did not either.
Okay. Then let's take a roll call when the consent calendar is published.
Salzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hale?
Aye. Okay, regular agenda, item 778.
Authorize the allocation of $8,600 to extend Portland Parks and Recreation's free summer lunch program between August 25th and August 29th at 11 sites.
Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you, Mayor Hales. And first, I want to thank Commissioners Fish and Saltzman for co-sponsoring this ordinance and helping my staff put it together in my absence. Portland Parks and Recreation provides over 100,000 free lunches to school-aged children in Portland every summer. However, at the end of every summer, there is a one-week gap where the school kitchens provide these lunches are closed. For $8,600, we can provide lunches at 11 sites for the week of August 25th through the 29th. This ordinance also directs the City Budget Office to add this to Park's current appropriation level for future years to ensure that we continue to feed children during this gap week.
Other co-sponsors that would like to speak about this?
I'll just make a quick comment, Mayor. First, I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for bringing this forward. Happy to co-sponsor it. In 2009, this issue first came up when we learned that there was a gap between the program that Parks was providing and the beginning of the school year. And that was the last time I recall the council addressing this, and Mayor Adams felt very strongly about this, and the council then appropriated some gap money. Fast forward, this is one of the most successful programs of Summer Free-for-All. As Commissioner Fritz said, over 100,000 healthy meals to kids. And the additional benefit is these meals are served in playground programs where parents can drop their kids off, know that they are in a safe place, exposed to healthy activities during the summer. And so it's one of the great programs in Summer Free-for-All. And while the federal government, through an entitlement program, pays for the food, the cost that the city's picking up has to do with the delivery and the distribution of the food. I think this is a vitally important program. I'm very pleased the council put hunger as a top priority for this council in terms of our budgeting. The kids that are served, and many of them are East Portland kids, need these healthy meals. And I think this is an excellent step in expanding the program so there is no gap. Too many kids go to bed hungry at night, and at least through this program, the kids that are served will not. So I thank Commissioner Fritz for bringing this forward, and I'm very proud to co-sponsor it.
Thank you. Dan?
Yeah, I'd like to thank Commissioner Fritz and Parks Director Mike Abate and his staff for coming up with this proposal to close the summer hunger gap in our parks programs. And although it's a small amount of money, it will really make a huge difference for hundreds of children that are faced with the dilemma of getting a meal in that week between when summer free-for-all ends and Portland schools begin. So once again, they can have lunch meals. So I'm very happy that there are a lot of transportation logistical issues around this, and I appreciate the Parks Bureau committing to do this. I also want to thank the Parks Foundation. I think we all got an email yesterday from Nick Hardig mentioning that the Parks Foundation is also contributing money to eliminate the summer meal gap. And I guess my only question, Commissioner Fritz, I just want to assure that the ongoing appropriation we're also creating today will go specifically for the summer meal gap.
Correct.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Great, thank you very much. Now, has anyone signed up to speak on this item?
We had two testifiers, okay. Charles Johnson and Joe Walsh.
Come on up. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and I do want to thank Commissioner Fritz and all you for your attention to this important matter, but I want to set the context for this in that there's something wrong with the governmental system, the federal, state, and local governmental system, when the City Council has to have an agenda item about feeding hungry children. The fact that we send most of Oregon's total tax revenue to Washington and then it's dribbled back, and the bureaucrats along the way can't make the system work so that children are already eating without a special item on the City Council, tells us that our government and the citizens who are supposed to be monitoring this government aren't quite getting their job right. So I want to encourage you and your legislative liaisons with Blumenauer, not so much Bonamici and stuff because of where we live, but especially Wyden and Merkley, that federal programs designed to assure adequate nutrition for children should just get the job done. There shouldn't need to be time-consuming bureaucratic paperwork, intergovernmental agreements, and stuff like that. It is good that in Portland we have the Children's Levy and a Parks Foundation that can be there to fill the gap. But as I want to encourage my fellow citizens and you to work to see that the federal programs get the job done so that children don't have to rely on an item being put on City Council so that they can have healthy, nutritious food in a gap week. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, if I just may defend our congressional representatives, I think that our representatives in this past year were engaged in battling people on the other side of the aisle who were perfectly willing to cut food stamps while eagerly reaffirming subsidies for agribusiness. So there is something of a partisan divide in the issue of food for hungry people versus subsidies and for that matter, massive military spending in Congress.
Definitely the military spending is a problem. And also, you know, all of us need to work on our communication with people who might be a little bit further south or a little bit further east, you know, to make sure that, you know, children over guns and bombs remains a top priority of this country, and that we can bring all of Oregon along to, regardless of our political party identification, you know, realize that it's much more beneficial to our society to focus on health and education for children than creating a few more bomber and Boeing and drone jobs. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. Congratulations. This is really a good thing. I was a volunteer at Atkinson for a long time, and we did a snack program for the children waiting for buses. So I'm very sensitive to these types of programs. The only criticism that I would offer is that not enough money in this budget. I would like to see more money. So I would like to see the five of you reconsider this and either now or next year when you do it, because I don't see anything coming out of Congress either, you'll probably have to do this again next year. I do have a question for the commissioner, though. What happens when you have these children getting these lunches, and obviously they're hungry, so they come from poor families. What happens to the families? Are they included in the lunch? So if a mother or a father was also hungry, is there a provision that you would allow them to enjoy the lunch also?
I'm not exactly sure of the answer to your question. I know that most of the children come without their parents because their parents are at work.
I think I know. Okay. I think I know a partial answer to that question, which is the federal funding is for the kids' lunches.
So you exclude everybody else.
Exclude is a hard word.
I use very hard words.
I'm not sure that that's always the practice, but it would probably be better to talk about it.
One of you have a staff member look into that, and maybe next year when you have more money, if you get some stuff done on the ballots, you could turn around and say, you know what, if a parent, one parent, I'm thinking, is in the park or wherever you're going to do the lunches, if they are hungry, do you have a provision not to turn them away? That would be very difficult for me as, say, a volunteer to do. So I don't want to put you in that position, and I'm suggesting that you have a staff member do some research and see if it's feasible or possible.
I'll do that, and I'll get back to you the next time I see you outside.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And again, congratulations.
Anyone else like to speak? Okay, it's an emergency ordinance. Let's take a roll call, please.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thanks to Commissioner Saltzman, who raised this when we were doing the initial allocations for the full summer program, and then Director Mike Abate, who got right on it and figured out as much as we could to do this. Also, Commissioner Fish, who did pioneer this, and throughout the course of the recession, we've made hard choices on the council and found funding for this program. Nick Hardig of the Portland Parks Foundation was mentioned. The day that we did the previous allocation, I was opening the summer program at Pier Park along with some of our corporate sponsors. And Nick Hardig, of course, was there, as he's at almost every event I go to for parks. And so he had mentioned that there was an anonymous donor who was willing to give some money. And the anonymous donor wanted to do an enrichment program so that kids wouldn't get bored. And as Nick and I discussed this funding problem, we thought, well, if kids are hungry, it's hard for them to do anything. So I believe he went back to that donor and helped engage that community. There are still some gaps, though. The ordinance mentions that Portland Public Schools, it completely covers the gap, but Centennial and David Douglas don't start until September 4th, so this is the first week after Labor Day for those districts. I'm not sure what the situation is in Park Rose. And also these 11 sites are only a fraction of the sites that we cover, but we couldn't figure out how to provide the services with the kitchens being closed for beginning of school activities. So I do encourage our Backpack Buddies program. This is not just a problem during the summer. During the school year, there are many faith communities that partner with Portland Public Schools and other public schools in the area, many in association with the Palau organization, that realized that kids were going hungry between Friday afternoon and Monday morning. And in some schools, they have to take turns with which kids get to take home food for the weekend. So I agree with Mr. Johnson's point that this is a disgrace in the country with the affluence that we have, that we have to draw lots for which kids are hungry over the weekend. And I'm very proud that we have our local government, which is in some ways the last resort or the safeguard to make sure that we can cover some of these programs, and we rely on our community volunteers as well. So if there are those watching at home who are in PTAs or in faith communities that should be asking their school administrators, who I believe are still on duty until they get their summer vacation, there's still more that needs to be done. But I'm very proud that this council is doing what we can. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Hales.
That's a good piece of work. I think we were all nodding during Mr. Johnson's testimony, because once again, the city's in a position of cobbling together a solution where other governments have responsibility, and not a new phenomenon. But I think it's a little more hopeful than that, in that once again, I think we found a common sense solution, a patch, if you will, And there's some other good things that are going on, but we have a huge hunger problem in Oregon and in this city. One of the good things that's going on, it's correlative to this, is that the Sun schools are having more and more food pantry operations staffed by volunteers. I saw the one out at Earl Boyle's, which was staffed by women from that neighborhood distributing food to their neighbors every Friday out of the Sun School, and they found a storage room in the elementary school where the food pantry can be operated. So there are a lot of these kind of local innovations involving usually the nonprofit sector, the food bank, a nonprofit group, volunteers, and the city, and the school district. But to try to make these things more certain and more regular and build them into budgets and programs for the long run, I think is where we all want to go. But for now, this is a creative and humane patch on a system that's not perfect by any stretch, and I'm really proud that we're doing this. Aye. Okay, item 779.